Good morning and welcome to Viewpoint, a weekly public service program heard each Sunday morning on WHMI. It's brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best unlimited network with two locations in Howell. I'm your host, John King. Coming up on this morning's show, we'll hear from Howell High School graduate from 2005, Katie Prout, who now works at the University of Iowa in their international writing program. She's in town this past week trying to get local students and others to apply for some creative writing programs being held at the University of Iowa over the summer. First up, though, the Brighton Area Fire Authority is asking voters within its coverage area to support a new millage request on the May 7th ballot. Fire Chief Mike O'Brien says staff has been very busy and facilities have been a limiting factor time and time again. He says the funding that they would receive if the millage is approved would help make sure they have the infrastructure to support their firefighters and keep meeting the requests that come in on a daily basis. He spoke with WHMI's Jessica Matthews about the importance behind the millage.
On May 7th, in Genoa Township, Brighton Township, and the city of Brighton, voters will have the opportunity to vote on a millage that is going towards the Brighton Area Fire Authority. It's a new millage that would be in addition to the current millage. So currently, we're in the third collection of a millage that's 1.5 mils, and that's really been our operating over the years to cover our operating costs. This request that's on the ballot is really to aid the organization in our capital or into our infrastructure. And so it's a request for 0.89 mils for 12 years. Now, we've been out talking about the millage and trying to get a lot of feedback from the public, and so we've had lots of great questions and lots of really positive feedback. But really, what this millage is doing is giving us the ability to build an addition at our Door Road station. This is the station that a lot of people probably have driven by. They may not realize that it's part of the Brighton Area Fire Authority, but this is right by Genoa Township Hall. So we cover all of Genoa. We cover out of a station on Chilson Road and then one on Door Road. Well, the one on Door Road, we're looking at an addition, and the intent there is to put adequate space on to staff that facility 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, somewhere after the construction is done. And so that's one piece to this millage request, as well as we just recently acquired 4 acres in Brighton Township adjacent to probably one of our oldest fire stations. And it's a very small station on Weber Road near US 23. So the millage is helping us make these strategic capital improvements with our buildings. And really, through the life of the 12 years, it touches all of our facilities and allows the authority to really be poised to grow with the community and provide some really good infrastructure that's going to allow us to respond better. A lot of people have asked, well, you currently have facilities, what's the big deal here? And for us, most of our facilities, they're great spaces for housing fire trucks. They've got a couple bathrooms and maybe a small office, but they're nothing really designed to aid our firefighters in what they're doing on a daily basis. And our firefighters do just about everything the community calls for, from emergency medical runs to putting out fires, auto vehicle accidents. And then our on-duty crews, we're doing home fire safety checks at people's homes, installing smoke alarms. They're out doing company-based inspections at businesses, to conducting public education events. So our staff is really busy, and our facilities have been the limiter time and time again. And so that is one aspect that the millage request that's out, and it really starts to then dive into making sure that we can replace our apparatus in accordance with our capital improvement schedule. Really looking forward, our apparatus, we spend about $900,000 a year in making sure we have appropriate apparatus. So we have a very comprehensive plan that we've been following for a little over 12 years, and we routinely keep this thing updated. And it's allowing us to make sure we maintain our fleet of apparatus so they're ready to go when you call us. And so there's a lot of moving pieces with this millage, but really the request just is coming down for the average taxpayer to help us make sure we have the infrastructure to support our firefighters and make sure we can keep meeting the requests that keep coming in on a daily basis for us.
Now, when you talk about two being replaced, do you mean just getting rid of them altogether and then selling that property and then going to the other ones, or finding new property to replace two in their place, I guess?
That's a great question. Some of it is all, we're evaluating that as staff and as a Brighton Area Board, Fire Board. It's a difficult decision. So we take our station in the city of Brighton on Grand River. That station, we've really maxed out its capabilities. And so the building is getting tired in many spots. It needs a new roof. The parking lot needs to be replaced. We have cracked windows. The list goes on maintenance items. But most importantly, when this station was built, it was really only built for the city of Brighton and a portion of Genoa Township. We're now a much larger conglomerate of things, and we're doing a lot more service delivery, and we just don't have the space in the building, not only for day-to-day administration, but for our 24-hour crews, to the storage of apparatus. So we're trying to evaluate what is the most cost-efficient for us. And it may be, you know, tearing down a portion of the building and redoing it. It could be rebuilding on the existing site, as well as we're looking at other pieces of property within a certain geographical area so we can keep our response times where they're at or improve them. It's a tricky thing. We don't want to put a fire station. There might be some property within the city of Brighton at the end of a dead-end street that doesn't typically help us with response times. We really want those fire stations to be near major traffic areas that we can get onto major roadways, onto the freeway, to the key areas that it needs to service in a quick time. And so that's the tricky part. When you look at, like, the city of Brighton, there isn't a ton of available property and land mass when you're looking for 3 acres to put a fire station on. So we're working with a lot of our partners. We're working with various areas to try to identify property that could work, and then whether or not it's financially feasible either way. May 7th is very important for us. This is a unique time frame, I think, for voters. And as a fire authority, we've been very cognizant of it because we realize that everything on the ballot, wherever you're at, is something about a request for taxes. And we know that our taxpayers' dollars, like anybody else, needs to be spent wisely. And that's how we really got to a 0.89 for 12 years, through a study done by an outside consultant, through our staff time and evaluation of our buildings and properties. We've really tried to look at how can we optimize any ask of the taxpayers and be really efficient with the money that's coming in. And so on May 7th, we need people to go out and vote because there's not a lot on the ballot. And if you're in Brighton Township, it's just us. And in other areas, it's us and somebody else, a municipal government or a school asking for money. So we need people to get out and vote on May 7th or fill out their absentee ballots and get them in, because it's really that important to make sure we can continue providing the service that is being asked of us by our citizens.
How much would the request cost, I guess, the average homeowner?
So the average homeowner, you know, that's a tricky one. So every $100,000 of their taxable value. So if your house is, you know, $200,000 house, it's $100,000 probably in SEV if you bought it within the recent time frame. So it would cost them $89 a year, in addition to the current 1.5 mils that's on their winter tax bill. So this would be in the summer tax bill, and it would be an offset. So if your home's, you know, $400,000, you'd be looking at, you know, an SEV of closer to $200,000, and it would be double that amount, or, you know, right around $180 a year.
For the operational millage that the authority currently that's four operations, the 1.5, that mm-hmm. expires in 2020?
It expires in 2021, and
oh,
I believe that would be... Yep, that would be our last... Well, it would expire. The last collection is December of 20. And so we would be going back out to our taxpayers to request a renewal on that operating millage. We really can't operate on one and not the other. It's really... They're intended to work very closely together and provide for operations as well as fixing the infrastructure or apparatus in buildings.
Playing devil's advocate, what if it doesn't pass then? Kind of what's the plan?
So if the millage doesn't pass, it's really going to continue to limit our ability to properly staff our buildings and respond. More and more, we're getting to a position where we're always asking for paid-on-call firefighters. We're asking staff to work shifts to cover openings, whether it's from paid-on-call response or to meet a service delivery. And our stations need to match what we need to be providing. And that's really where we're at. So if it doesn't pass, it's really going to limit our ability to properly be prepared to respond. And that's a hard thing, I think, for all of us to contemplate. I would say that in many of the fire organizations that we've seen, I truly believe that the Brighton Area Fire Authority is really optimized. We are really efficient in many things we do. Most of our staff are doing dual roles. Our staffing model uses part-time, full-time. We've done a really fair thing with our employees to make sure we don't have these big debts. In fact, the fire authority has no debt right now. We're very creative in how we utilize the money we get to provide the services. So we're really getting to the point that we have to update these stations so we can keep providing great service. If you've driven around the Brighton area, you know our traffic's getting busier. If you've driven around, you've seen the area growing up with more and more buildings, which puts more demand on our staff and requests for our service. And it's just a natural thing for the organization to transition to providing more combination of on-duty personnel with our on-call staff. And really, voting yes helps us continue to do that.
And you did just touch on it, but I know that in some of the last few years for the annual reports and even just recently, the authority is seeing a huge increase in calls, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things that it doesn't really stop. And the interesting part is we're always working with our partners to evaluate runs that we may or may not need to go on. So, for instance, if you take medical incidents, we've got Livingston County Ambulance who provides a great service, but we assist them on a lot of medical incidents. And over the years, we're always evaluating, are we going on the ones that we're making a difference? So, you know, if you dial 911 and it's a very minor injury, you're probably not going to see one of our fire apparatus there unless that vehicle's relatively close by or maybe there's a limited response out of EMS. But those critical EMS runs, you're going to see our staff. So when we see the increase in the run volume that we're seeing, and we're still saying more and more that we're in this reduced amount, it just shows what's out there and what's really happening. I mean, our staff is seeing some just, there are days when I'm looking at our daily reports and we see the number of incidents that our staff is being requested to, from EMS calls to possible building fires to vehicle fires to car accidents. The list goes on and on of the things that they're going on. It's not uncommon for our staff to go out 15, 16 times a day out of various stations. And you don't always think about that in Brighton, but I was at a presentation this week, and it's always amazing to me how many times people ask, hey, what were the sirens doing yesterday, right? I heard the sirens five times yesterday from my office. What did you guys go on? And it's almost like, hey, we are going on so many things, it's hard to remember. And that's really a true testament to our staff. They're working hard to make sure that we are ready to go when people call 911.
And then I know there was some issues with staffing before, just I guess for the larger fire service. I guess how has that been with our, like, I guess kind of recruitment efforts, that kind of a thing?
Sure. So in fact, we have our HR director Ann Campbell's at the Livingston County job fair this week, actively recruiting paid on call firefighters throughout. We are always looking for firefighters, and we have a class of about 15 due to finish Fire 1 and 2 Academy in the next couple months, and so we're excited about that. It always takes us about a year to train new firefighters from when they come in, and so it's a very difficult thing. We're always looking for firefighters to work our system as paid on call. But it takes time. It takes us about a year to get them ramped up from, you know, the time we hire them to the time they're done. And, you know, a lot of times firefighters work for, I don't know, anywhere from 3 to 5 years, and sometimes we get them for 20 years. But there is no doubt that I really, within Livingston County and within the entire state, and for a big portion, volunteerism is low, and we think we provide a great opportunity for people to come work, be in the profession, and heck, even have an opportunity for a full-time job. But it's a never-ending recruitment challenge for us to kind of hang that banner out there that we're hiring, and we'll start our big recruitment campaign probably in May for the next year in the next academy.
The authority is sponsoring something new, trying to attract, it looks like, maybe more women to the field, I guess?
No doubt, yeah. The Fire Authority, Brighton Area Fire Authority employs quite a few females already. I think we're probably one of the bigger employers on the fire side with number of females. And so we're excited to offer a Girls on Fire Camp is what we're calling it. And it's for females between the ages of 14 and 18 years of age, and we're hoping, it's a day camp that runs June 17th through the 19th from 8 a.m. till 3, and the camp is really designed to do a couple things: break down some of the barriers as it relates to the fire service, provide some great leadership training, as well as some self-confidence, and really dive in so they can get a view of what the fire service is about. We have our cadet program that is always looking for young men and women, that's for 16-year-olds. We have the Howell High School Fire Academy that's open to any Livingston County student for juniors and seniors. And so we're always looking for ways to help get that seed planted early, that fire and EMS is a great opportunity for them to be in. So this camp, we're hoping, helps stimulate in those young minds, provide some great leadership opportunity for them, as well as maybe get to do some things you never thought you could do, like utilizing the jaws of life, or maybe a power saw, or some of the fascinating, cool things we do within the fire service in a training supervised atmosphere. And so we're really excited about this. We partnered with some of the other area fire departments. We know Heartland Deerfield has been very active in helping us. So we're really excited. There is information on our webpage, and we put it on our Facebook account, and believe it or not, spots are filling up fast. So if somebody's interested, female, between the age of 14 and 18, it's, you know, maybe thinking that down the road, the fire service or being an EMS or a paramedic is in their future, we hope that they drop their application in and get it in soon.
I had a chance this week to speak with 2005 Howell High School graduate Katie Prout, who has branched off in teaching students from different cultures and nationalities about the power of expressing oneself through creative writing. Obviously, you're a Howell native, but you are currently a writer working at the University of Iowa on staff with the International Writing Program.
That's correct. I'm the Youth Programs Coordinator at the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa.
So, I guess, tell us right now the
program is going on where you're looking for young students to submit story ideas to you. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so in my role at the International Writing Program, which I call the IWP, I run a program called Between the Lines, and it's a two-week creative writing and cultural exchange program at the University of Iowa that the IWP hosts and oversees. And it's for students who are 15 to 18 years old. And this summer we're running two special sessions, one from June 22nd to July 6th, and the other one from July 13th to July 27th. And so during this each two-week session of Between the Lines, students gather. It's a two-week cultural and creative writing exchange. Students spend their mornings in literature seminars and afternoons in creative writing workshops. We have their established writers, authors, and poets to teach. Students spend their evenings in special programming, rather, whether that's an open mic slam, book binding, going to nearby Lake McBride for hiking and swimming, and they stay in dorms at the university where we really practice and encourage students to use creative writing to communicate with one another and address misunderstandings, especially intercultural misunderstandings. So it's a pretty special time. At the end, the students really seem to enjoy it, and they get to publish an anthology of their own work, too, which is pretty a cool thing to be able to take home when you're a teenager, is a publication with your own poetry or your own creative nonfiction.
Yeah, absolutely. So you talked about the two different programs, the one June 22nd through July 6th, that's called Identity and Belonging. Now, that's a fully funded session.
That's correct. So that one is special. It's funded by the Doris Duke Foundation for Islamic Art. They're Building Bridges program. And that one, that session, Identity and Belonging, is fully funded for everyone who's accepted. Anybody 15 to 18 years old in the United States is eligible to apply. But we are looking especially for 10 spots for Muslim students and 10 for non-Muslim. So it's designed to forge intercultural communication and understanding and address misconceptions and discord between young U.S.-based Muslims and non-Muslims, particularly in low-income or marginalized or first and second generation immigrant communities. And we will look at using creative writing, whether that's poetry or spoken word, or sci-fi stories as a way to grow and establish empathy, look at diverse perspectives, and become more sure of our own identities, too.
And the other program, which was July 13th through the 26th, Peace and the Writing Experience.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that. And that one's not fully funded, but there's scholarships available.
That's correct. Thanks. Yeah, so that one that's kind of our flagship program that's funded by the U.S. Department of State, the Educational and Cultural Affairs Bureau, and it brings together 10 U.S. students from around the country with, this year, it'll be 30 international students, so again, 15 to 18 years old, but that one has a slightly more international focus where 10 U.S. students this summer will be joining students from along the historic Silk Road, so Nepal, China, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, Armenia, students along that area will be coming together. And that one, again, is similar where it's using creative writing and literature to explore what it means to belong, explore differences and creative ways to talk about those differences. Not necessarily about, you know, trying to get everyone to have, of course, the same values or the same perspective, but how to use story and use writing to express our differences in ways that are respectful and compassionate and nuanced, and then practice listening to one another and being able to, you know, creative writing is interesting because it allows you, when you are a writer or, for that matter, when you're reading, you are, in some ways, like no other art form, able to actually be in someone else's perspective, literally, you know, in their shoes as you're reading the pages of that character walking around. So even if you don't necessarily have a familiarity with their culture or their politics or their perspective, you get to inhabit it for a little bit, and you can't help but develop a more sort of compassionate understanding for them. Even if you still don't have the same values or understanding, you can have respect and dignity for that. So that's the kind of bend of both programs, but the Peace and Writing Experience, again, has a more international sort of flavor, you could say.
Well, I have to tell you, reading through the description of these programs, I'm sort of jealous, but I can't apply for them. I mean, it's evenings and weekends are spent on the assorted adventures, attending literary and cultural events in Iowa City, swimming and hiking in nearby Lake McBride State Park, exploring each other's cultures through open mic nights and collaborative filmmaking. I mean, as interesting as this is, and as I think important that it is, it just sounds like a lot of fun.
It's so much fun. You know, the students, it's really interesting. So last year was my first year doing it, and they just, you know, you have students from all different backgrounds, different walks of life, lots of different personalities, some more boisterous, some more quiet. And, you know, you're a couple days in, and everybody is jet-lagged and exhausted, and maybe food's not agreeing with their tummies, or maybe they're frustrated with a roommate, and you're like, oh, no, here we go, what are we doing? And then they just simply by having to be vulnerable together and share that creative writing space and listen to each other, and they all get up on stage and share that open mic, and they all cheer for each other, or they all work on these collaborative art projects, or they go, you know, we also just do stuff like go to the mall, you know, and let them, you know, kick back and relax. By the end, we have a graduation ceremony and with a prom, a between-the-lines prom that's usually got some, like, cool, funky theme, and they all go to thrift stores to get, like, weird costumes and stuff, or they bring traditional clothes from home. And we can't get them to separate. Like, the last night before everybody has to fly home is spent, you know, and running around looking for their passports because they've all jumbled up all their stuff with each other's rooms, and they're all trading phone numbers, and they're all saying, I love you. And those relationships last years, we check in with the students, you know, every year with our alumni, and some of our alumni have gone on to start creative writing exchanges in their own home countries or creating creative writing clubs back in their high school. Some of them have gone on to be published writers themselves. It's really cool to see the lasting impact of those relationships, even with the distance that happens. You know, thank God for social media and the internet, because it really allows students to continue to cultivate those close relationships that they develop in Iowa City.
And so, again, you're looking for students to apply for either one of these programs.
Correct.
Anyone even here from the Livingston County area is welcome and encouraged to apply.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited. You know, I'm actually going back to Howell High School today, this afternoon, to run a creative writing workshop in a poetry class, sort of BTL-inspired. It means a lot to me to be able to come back to my hometown and my home state and encourage students to apply. You know, as a little creative writing kid myself, this program is not something I would have been able, or rather a program like this is not something I would have been able to afford to do, which is why I'm so glad that we are able to offer like fully funded positions for everyone who's accepted for the first session. And we offer scholarships up to fully funded positions depending on a student's need for the second. So it's really something that I think is like a wonderful and kind of unique experience. And I'm happy to answer questions. If parents have any questions or guardians, students themselves, applications are due by April 26th, so we're just, you know, a couple of weeks away. But yeah, I'd love to see, it's important to me to be able to kind of bring the resources that the International Writing Program has back to my home state.
And people can apply online. The website's pretty lengthy, iwp.uiowa.edu/program/between-the-lines. We'll put a link for that at whmi.com if people want to go there.
And students and parents and anyone can email me, too. If that's easier, I'm happy to direct folks through the application process. If they just get in contact with me at BTL, so like between the lines, BTL-program@uiowa.edu.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Katie Prout, with the International Writing Program and Between the Lines coming up this summer. And maybe we could chat with you after the programs are over and see how it went.
I'd love that. Thanks so much, John. I'd really appreciate that.
And that's it for this edition of Viewpoint, brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best unlimited network with two locations in Howell. Opinions expressed on Viewpoint are not necessarily those of WHMI staff, management, or its advertisers. If you have a comment about today's show or a suggestion for a future segment, call us during normal business hours at 517-546-0860 or send an email to news@whmi.com. Until next Sunday, I'm John King on WHMI, Livingston County's own 93.5.